This is Ed Asner, and you're listening to No Lies Radio.
Welcome to the special live edition of Truth Jihad Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Verrett, waving the Truth Jihad all over the United States, and indeed all over the world, not only by way of the wonderful internet airwaves that allow us to talk to folks on five continents from the comfort of our own home or motorhome or cheap motel or somebody's couch or wherever the heck I happen to be staying, but I actually get to move around and burn up fossil fuel and put carbon into the atmosphere as I go from place to place telling people about what's really going on. And there is a hunger for it, folks. I filled the house in Denver, Colorado just a couple of days ago talking about recent false flags. And I think people are tired of the election BS and ready to hear some truth, some hardcore truth. They're wondering, is there any truth to these conspiracy theories that Trump is citing in the debates and the even worse ones that he's not? Well, come on out, folks. Go to BarrettEvents.blogspot.com. The best way to get there is just to go to TruthJihad.com. And you'll see events, and you click on that. So go to truthjihad.com. Click events, and you'll see where I will be talking, maybe somewhere near you. I'm going out to Northern California real soon. Hope to see you there. Santa Cruz, Berkeley, Sacramento, Grass Valley, or wherever you may be. Truth is interested in you and coming to a location near you. All right, that's PSA number one. PSA number two, please support Revolution Radio. It's the greatest listener-supported station or network, rather, or even networks, plural, because we got Studio A and we got Studio B. So these are the greatest listener-supported networks in the world, and they will continue to be if you give generously at freedomslips.com. All right, let's get going with our show today. Got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about with a lot of interesting people. And there, okay, we got Gordon Duff asking now, and I'm going to Skype him and add him and say, yes, Gordon, it's now. Hey, welcome, Gordon Duff. How are you doing? Yeah, you're live on the air speaking to people on five continents, maybe six if our extraplanetary neighbors are listening. No, we're about to bring up Ian. Let me see if I can get Ian on here, too. Yeah, I'm working on him. Let me see. Ian, add. Yeah, geez. I'm trying to figure out how to. Yeah. Yes, Gordon, can you hear me? I hear Gordon. Yes, I can. Since we have some kind of weird issue going here with Gordon. Let me see if we lost him. Geez. Oh, yeah, live radio. It's exciting stuff, I'll tell you, folks. I haven't had Gordon Duff on for a while, so we're going to try and bring him on again. I don't know if I need to try adding Ian first. I have to add Ian to my contacts. I got it. Okay, so there you go. So I'm trying to bring on Ian, and now we're going to try and bring Gordon back. Jeez, Gordon's a little too overeager. Let me add you to the call.
Okay, we're trying again here.
Okay, hi, Gordon, do you hear me?
Yeah, I'm on this conference now.
Okay, you're playing too many games with Skype. It's too complicated. The easiest thing is for you to just kind of sit there until I add you to the network group call. Let me see if I can bring Ian up here too. Okay, I just got Ian added, and the question is though, can I add him to call? Yes, we got him now. Okay, he's on the way. Ian Greenhall coming at us live, I believe, from the United Kingdom. Ian, what time is it where you are?
It's 6 minutes past 1 a.m.
Well, I thank you so much for staying up this late to be on Truth Jihad Radio. You're a better man than I. I don't stay up till 1 a.m. to be on almost anybody's show.
I don't get up very early at the moment, so.
Yes.
Ian's up working on VT stuff until, at his time, 3 a.m. pretty much. That's why we have morning news, is because he catches the morning news in the middle of the night.
I find it so much easier to work at night. I don't know why. I think it's probably because there's no distractions. But I do my best work at night.
And it's dark outside, too.
Yeah.
And don't forget that the abnormal interference that we're getting from whoever's trying to cause trouble for us is perhaps leveraged on sunlight. Wouldn't that explain why it's easier to think clearly about these matters at night?
Well, really, many of the people that we're having difficulty with typically don't come out during the day anyway.
They crawl out from under their rocks in the evening, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things about this, we've had in the last few days, I've had people like Tim White and Debbie Menon and others who we had consigned long ago to the trash heap. They've been gone or out of the, let's say, out of the limelight and not really working or taking part or doing anything since the early days of the internet when, we'll say the, you could pretty much sit home in your basement and make up conspiracy theories and, you know, troll nasty comments to people and, you know, after a while.
Hey, wasn't that, that was the golden age, Gordon.
Yeah, well, what we were forced to do, and Ian will attest to this, we've been forced to learn journalism. There is no mainstream journalism. Most of us are, although wonderfully educated, as far as journalistic skills go, we're self-taught. Real mainstream journalism is all interns and high school students and failed bloggers anyway, so there's only us. And we've been forced to tighten up as far as our sources of information, how we express ourselves. We've had to do this simply because it's been demanded. It reminds me of the film, and Ian, I think you remember this, the scene out of, oh gosh, Rorke's Rift.
Zulu.
Yeah, Zulu. But why us, Color Sergeant? Why us? And you reply?
I cannot remember, I'm afraid. I know that film very well, but I can't remember. I can picture it. I can picture the actors, but I can't remember the reply.
Because we're here.
Of course, yeah.
There's a famous
World War One British song. We're here because we're here because we're here because we're here.
Well, let me do a quick shout out to my friends over at the Weary Traveler in Madison, Wisconsin. Bragan may be listening to this, and their motto, which they actually have a bumper sticker they'll give you for free, is "We're all here because we're not all there."
That's a good one. Yeah.
But now during our ultra hip, move into the post millennial time. No, we have to be a lot quicker than this, you know. One of my things today with Jeff Rentz is whether we should actually start a third party campaign where Donald Trump's penis can actually run as a third party candidate, because I believe it's who his supporters are really planning on voting for, so they might as well actually have the candidate of their choice. And not be bothered by the, you know, the red fluffy hair and the orange Oompa Loompa skin and the rest of it. just get the guy that they're really interested in, the one they admire, and the one that they wish to emulate.
Okay, well, let me jump onto that topic since you brought it up, Gordon. I get all kinds of backlash from people, and some of them have quaffed major draughts of the Trump Kool-Aid. I mean, they've guzzled gallons of the Trump Kool-Aid, some of them. I don't really want to name a whole lot of names. Spencer! No, I'm just kidding. But others are maybe more like me, sort of, you know, not at all enthused about any of these major party candidates and quite, you know, have absolutely no use for the kinds of, you know, foreign policy positions that Hillary's putting out there, concerned that she may very well blunder into World War III. At the same time, maybe we're not Trump fans, but yeah, you got to admire Trump's blurt outs.
Kevin, I don't mean to do this to you on your own show, but what are you saying? This is your show, but in general, I'm the boss here. And simply because, hey, because I'm like Donald Trump, except probably better looking and. Only slightly, that's crazy.
Well, I would vote for you, Gordon, but I wouldn't vote for your private parts, that's for sure.
Well, it's one of the... You've never met my private parts, and you're not likely
to. I'm not planning to.
Yeah, and it's... I don't think it's scheduled for any of us. But the issue I'm having here with what you were saying and why I'm being preemptive is simply this. You're predicating... your view of foreign policy issues, and this is my area of expertise, security issues. What I do for, it's my day job and has been for a long time. It's all right for you to say what you're saying as long as you leave out two of Trump's beliefs. One, that he supports a preemptive attack on Iran because of their nuclear program and has said he would back Israel to that extent. And that's beyond, way beyond anything that Hillary said.
I was just pointing this out myself to a Kool-Aid drinker, Gordon.
Oh, yeah. And then point number two, that he supports the ethnic cleansing of the West Bank. And that's it. That, and the ethnic cleansing of the West Bank, of course, would be the blind support of Israel's policy in plowing under villages in an area that they occupy and are building in violation of the Geneva Convention, meaning that policy, his stated support of that policy, is in itself a war crime and is punishable at this time. It rises to the extent of conspiracy.
And let's not even get into recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's eternal, undivided capital.
And that's another war crime. And those things have been, whether Democrat or Republican, even George W. Bush wouldn't cross that red line. But Trump has crossed those red lines not because he necessarily has any sort of plans or intentions. He's just so stupid he doesn't know that there are considered major blunders for the United States, and the things he has said utterly destroy the tenets of American foreign policy. He just is absolutely torpedoed the United States through what he said, and you can't come back from that. Now, a lot of idiots talk about bombing Iran, and you know, I think you know they're kind of welcome to it. The other point here are Hillary's statements, her bellicose statements, and Ian will attest to this. We run a study group at Veterans Today. We take every statement made, and we try to find out if somebody really said it. Now, we have a number of statements that were taken from Hillary's emails. We have a number of statements that were reported in the media about Hillary's positions. And then we find out what Hillary actually said. Now, Hillary on her own, her foreign policy, she's very much in the Kool-Aid area of expressing what I'd like to think we've all moved past long ago. But a significant percentage of the things that Hillary is supposedly backing up and supposedly supporting, let's take the Hillary's backing up a no-fly zone. Now, did Hillary back a no-fly zone? No. Did Hillary discuss a no-fly zone? Yes. What was her position? Hillary opposed the no-fly zone. Why was it said she backed one? Because she opposed it. Oh, but then who reported it? That mainstream media that Trump says is trying to sabotage him. Oh, but did they sabotage her instead? Doesn't that undercut what Trump said about the mainstream media, meaning that on a no-fly zone, Hillary warned that it would be irresponsible because you'd have to take out air defense systems that would kill civilians if you did that, and in doing so, you would defeat the purpose of saving lives through a no-fly zone because you would end up killing too many people. Her statement was totally rational, but it was presented as a bellicose support of a no-fly zone when it was absolutely the opposite. Now, we
don't want to know the Zionist mouthpiece utterance on that. Just listen to what Boris Johnson said, where he said a no-fly zone in Syria would mean shooting down Russian aircraft.
Which he has no problem with, however.
Exactly. Now, the point being, whichever U.S. candidate says the same as Boris Johnson is also spouting the Zionist party line.
Right. Well, Gordon, let me back you up for a second here, because, the mainstream media may have exaggerated, you know, Hillary's bellicosity in Syria, but for them, that's a good thing. The mainstream media is telling us that Trump is evil because he's aligned with the Russians, with Putin, and Putin is helping hack emails and so on and so forth. So the mainstream is trying to tell us that, yeah, we need a war in Syria, and Hillary's the one for it. What am I missing?
You're utterly and absolutely wrong. Ian, explain it to him.
Well, if we're going to talk about Trump and Russia, the man that you have to mention is a man called Felix Sater, who, when Trump, twice Trump has walked out of interviews when asked if he knew Felix Sater, and in a video deposition made a few years ago at an attorney's office, Trump said that he had never met, that he had met Felix Sater but wouldn't recognize if he walked into a room full of people and he was there. But Felix Sater for several years was a senior advisor to Donald Trump on the floor below him in Trump Towers in New York. And Felix Sater is the link between Donald Trump and the Russian mafia. And because Felix Sater was, well, he's part of the Russian mafia. He's from Brighton Beach, and he's part of the laundering of money mechanism on Wall Street for the Russian mafia. He was actually convicted of Wall Street financial finagling, but got off when the CIA defended him and said, no. He works for us. His job was to go to Russia and hunt down Stinger missiles and things on the black market on our behalf. So he's also a CIA spook.
That Felix Sater was doing this on behalf, by the way, of Liuana, who his handler was at the time.
Well, then he was legit.
Didn't Sater gouge somebody's eye out off a bar stool in Manhattan?
He broke a glass and then shoved the stem of it in somebody's face.
Yeah, it was
But basically, the point of that is to say that, no, Trump is not aligned to Putin. Trump is aligned to the fifth column that is the bugbear on Putin's backside.
But, and Kevin, let's, and I would focus Ian more than this. One of the things we do on the other side here in VT, while you're busy gadding about selling those books of yours so that you feed those children.
Hey, it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
We go through the news every day, and we analyze the stories that come out. And then when people fail to check where the stories originated, who runs the publication, which CIA branch, or is it Booz Allen Hamilton, or did it come from the Moscow Times, or did it come from Radio Liberty? But we are making people account for where everything comes from, where it originated, and we have found with some consistency that the version of reality that is creating what you're picking up, and I'm saying I'm dealing with the people who are trained news watchers but not trained intelligence agents. And this is our great failure with Fetzer. We worked with him for 3 years to get him to check sources and to make sure he wasn't being continually had with bogus stories. And I won't say that I'm drinking a glass of Riesling right now on the air, but you can do this on radio.
Yeah.
You can't do it on TV unless you're on cable, of course. But in doing this...
We find false sources almost daily nowadays.
Yeah. You would have to actually sit through the process with us at some point. And it's not going to end up being a defense of Hillary. She's still saying things that make her sound batshit crazy. I can't fix that. I can't make Hillary sane. Okay, I can't do it. I can't make her position, and I can't explain her attachment to the neocons and their position against Donbass. I can't explain, and it's very real support against Russia as an enemy. On the other hand, when we find that raised to bellicosity, we invariably find that the distance from broad statements about preparing for Russia to the irresponsible statements are unattributed statements that come out in press organs. What was that publication in Saudi Arabia? We caught that one the other day. It was owned by the Saudi royal family. Do you remember the name of it?
Yes, I'll butcher the pronunciation. Ashaq al-Osad.
Ashaq al-Osad is probably the leading Saudi publication and probably the most heavily funded publication out of the Arab world in English.
And the stories are coming out of the Israeli intelligence services, Kevin. They're laundering through there, and they're coming out not only into the American media, but they're going into Al Alam and to Fars and Press TV through there. Unattributed stories, and this is always the case when we have a an unnamed White House source, or as in the story Ian had last week, that was a major coup for VT. We had a story attributed to an unknown Pentagon official stating that the Pentagon unilaterally was going to direct attacks against the Syrian Arab armies, air defenses, and they were going to do it without the permission of President Obama. Ian, didn't they say to save President Obama from embarrassment?
Yeah.
And of course.
So who makes that up and why?
Well, as we had said, that was made up by the Israeli security services. It was laundered through, and I'm not going to try to pronounce that. And then it was published in Al Alam, who didn't check the source, and they didn't realize that there are no unattributed sources from the Pentagon. And the idea that the Pentagon would say, that's all right, we're overthrowing the U.S. government, not because we're going to kill off the president or whatever, we just don't want him embarrassed.
Right. Well, you can see, though, why that kind of thing would work with Al Alam or another kind of, you know, from the Iranian perspective. You know, you've got this U.S. aggression, you've got your Zionist aggression, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, anything that sounds like it's kind of messing with the other side, like, oh, we've got this great revelation that there's a problem between the president and the military.
Yes.
Of course, we're going to go with it and exaggerate it. So they're, no, naturally, they're going to fall for that.
It wasn't presented as a problem between the president and the military, and there is such a problem. It was presented to indicate more or less that President Obama was perfectly fine with allowing the Pentagon to just attack whoever they wanted, no matter what the threat of nuclear war, as a way of convincing the Russians that the U.S. is run by lunatics. The story was laundered not into the U.S. and not into the shitstream media, you know, the Fetzerite media, but it was laundered into Russia. The key target of all these stories, and frankly, the key target of Ian. Mm-hmm. How often a week do we write stories, and do we have to stop because we're concerned about how the Russian Foreign Ministry will take them? Let Kevin know how those discussions go.
Well. We every week we produce at least one piece that is specifically targeted for our friends in Moscow, because maybe it's because of 70 years of communism and an ingrained distrust of any media source, but they are very, very far behind the West in their understanding of propaganda and the media and how the weaponization of such can be damaging to them. You know, that we've become aware in the last few months that sources like RT and Sputnik have been infiltrated and compromised.
Absolutely.
This is because the Russians have allowed it to happen, because they don't seem to grasp the danger that that poses to them. You know, they don't seem to understand that they don't need to just be worried about conventional forms of warfare. Warfare now takes on so many other forms, and one of the main ones is weaponization of the media. And we need to get the Russians up to speed on that, because it's hurting them. The fact that they don't seem to grasp that. You know, that, yes, Russia and Putin are very aware that they have got a fifth column that they have to fight and deal with. But what they need to grasp is that one of the main ways that that fifth column is hurting them is through its infiltration of their media, primarily RT and Sputnik.
Well, let me ask you guys, you know, in terms of the big picture, you know, the kind of orientation of, you know, what's happening on the battlefield, correct me if I'm wrong here, but as I see it, the financial class of the West, you know, primarily, you know, the people in New York and London and maybe Tel Aviv and stuff, maybe over in Basel, Switzerland and so on. These are the people who are facing a situation where the rest of the world is rapidly catching up with the West financially. And as Brzezinski says in the Grand Chessboard, we only have a couple of decades to try to make Western values, to give them as much, sway in the way the world evolves as possible. So that's kind of the starting place. And within that framework, there's a faction, including the neocons at the most extreme end, that wants to go out and kind of fight the war while we can still win it, and not only try to, give Western values a push, but to take over the world. Now, Hillary, with her friends at Goldman Sachs and her neocon friends, doesn't she represent those very people?
Kevin?
Yeah.
There's a reason I'm doing this, more or less. We sit closer to sources all day. Now, I'm going to Africa tomorrow. And I am meeting with, minimally two heads of state of major African nations. I'm meeting with security officials from four countries, two heads of state, over regional security issues tied to what you're dealing with. The point of view you have is one I would have shared, let's say, 18 months ago, Kevin. This is why I kind of get after you about, these nasty mornings where you have to sit in with us. I'm really telling you, we do a morning meeting, because all of us here get dragged to the woodshed, and I'll hold one view, but when I hold a view, Kevin, it's not like, let's say, it's like writing a book here. When you write a book, you've got a closet full of books, garage full of books, and you've got to sell the books, even though a week later you learn that maybe the world worked a little differently. The neocons, to this extent, when we go back to the year, remember, the neocons are so very 1995, 6, and 7. Mm-hmm. By the time Bush got out, these guys had moved along. They moved through their lives. They burned each other over and over. Wolfowitz is gone. Pearl is gone. All these guys are gone. All that's left are the Kagans, and these are second stringers. Their primary tool is the Institute for the Study of War. Their last-ditch influence is with only limited circles at the Pentagon. Their friends within the Pentagon were all gotten rid of by Chuck Hagel and Marty Dempsey as chairman of the Joint Chiefs. They no longer have standing. This is why you see the Kagans getting behind Hillary. And, we're thinking neocons. Well, neoconservatism is not only past, it's a bugaboo from 1997. I will tell you, the bugaboo we're dealing with now makes the neocons look like a joke. The neocons are superseded to the extent that they've gone, Kevin, from years ago, they were our blood enemies. Now they're pussycats.
But why then?
They even answer emails from me now.
Okay, so they do. But why then is U.S. policy continuing down this road of destroying Israel's enemies in Syria now? We've already destroyed Libya. And frankly, Gordon, you and I, to some extent, were on the wrong side of that one. Let's not even get into Libya.
Let's stop you here, because...
The neocons got everything they wanted.
Not hardly. You're operating in that other world here.
Okay, so we've had a peace dividend. Our 1990s era military spending has continued to drop, and the U.S. is no longer intervening around the world, and certainly not moving towards the borders of Russia.
This would be a great classroom debate here with a moderator whacking both of us on the head, and it'd be a good debate. It'd be fun. But this position you've had, it stood then because the then would have only been 2 years ago, let's say. It stood the task of analysis based on the information you had then. The point being is, when we have Kerry and Lavrov sitting down over and over, and we look at this alignment, what we know, and then there's dot connecting, which you know how dangerous it is, especially when you overreach. Mm-hmm. We have noted strong Israeli objections, and not Jewish objections, because the Jews are, on a whole, mainstream progressive liberal Democrats. But the extremist Zionists have turned out, and then we can take this back over the last few years and further, are aligned with the Saudis. We've watched Erdogan join with them, and we've watched this dance with Erdogan, where he's joined with Ukraine, and he sent the Grey Wolves up there. He's been trying to threat, and then he tried fronting off the Russians. He got burned. He has more or less recognized that, and this is in Turkey, you understand, has a very limited control over its own eastern half that can easily be cut off. The Russians have a long-term battle plan where they run right through Azerbaijan without even slowing down. They've got the highways picked out and wipe out the eastern half of Turkey. They have the battle plans written. NATO got a hold of it years ago. Jim Hanke is, who's a former NATO intelligence chief, and of course one of your fellow editors, relayed that to us. Erdogan sees that coming. He has overextended himself. He found himself in bed with the Saudis. The Saudis are getting their asses handed to them in Yemen. He got in bed with the Israelis, and he's more or less come to the recognition of which way things are going there.
Okay, quick question. Why would the Russians want eastern Turkey?
The Russians are going to have to would take eastern Turkey before allowing Erdogan to establish a Kurdish state that is predicated on controlling the northern section of Syria, mm-hmm. about a half of Iraq, a small piece of Iran, the current Kurdish regional government region, and of course establishing a probable nuclear state running from the Sunni areas of Iraq through the Golan Heights and controlling Syria. Because Syria, will guarantee you, if a Kurdish state is established, Syria and Iraq would both fall. Mm-hmm. And that has been utterly and absolutely blocked. What we had 8 or 9 months ago, we had Barzani, who was the prime minister of the Kurdish regional government out of Erbil, someone I've spent a few days in the car with at a time and gotten in just... We fought for a couple of days and then made up. I've got some great Barzani stories. One of them, I was trying to get Carol a Christmas gift, and he took me into a warehouse on the in Erbil. There's a what do they call the rubble pile? That's the old city in Erbil, the Citadel. In the Citadel, there's an old warehouse, and he said, "Gordon, they've got stuff up in there." So, parked the car, went inside, and this huge warehouse full of old Turkish rifles, swords, stuff stolen from the museums in Baghdad, and all of the old spy equipment that Saddam had used for tapping telephones. So I'm wearing a suit and tie, and I take off the tie, and the shirt's going to be a mess. But I'm crawling around on the floor. I find a small Sumerian horse. It's only about 7,000 years old, and it's 4 inches tall, and obviously illegal as hell to have, and I say, "Well, how much is this thing?" You know, figuring it'd be $50 or something. He wanted $5,000 for it. And that's the last time I'm going anywhere where the prime minister's my driver.
Well, that's an expensive ride, a Sumerian horse. So getting back to Barzani and this Kurdistan thing. Okay, so as we all know, that the grand strategy there that we're talking about is the hardline Zionists want to bust up the region, balkanize it, the Oded Yunon plan, and so on. And Turkey kind of is attached to its national boundaries and wouldn't mind to biting off more.
Well, let's go back to that period where the 12,000 trucks were delivering oil to Turkey, and Erdogan claimed he never saw them. Now, one of the stories we had discussed a bombing attack on those trucks that the Russians ran back in March.
Mm.
Now, if you check the name of the city, Kevin, the Russians attacked those planes or those trucks, the 12,000 trucks or however many they attacked, that, you know, with just lines and lines of them were burned up. That was inside Iraq. They flew into Iraq and hit them there.
Mm-hmm.
If we follow the road where those trucks were, that road from the oil fields, where, you know, the Kirkuk fields where they loaded those trucks were loaded. They were taken on the freeway around the outskirts of Erbil, right through the center of Barzani's controlled territory, the ISIS trucks. They were taken through Mosul, north past the Turkish base set up 20 miles north of Mosul, which sits right on the highway. Those trucks drove right past it, then drove right past the Kurdish checkpoints, which are 15 miles east of Duhok, and drove the 80 miles up into Turkey. Most of that drive of those ISIS-controlled trucks was through Kurdish-controlled territory, most of it. When they were hit by the Russians, those trucks were hit in a Kurdish-controlled area. They had ISIS drivers, ISIS oil, and the security on those trucks was from the Kurdish regional government, the enemy of ISIS. And nobody loves explaining things like that, and we run into those things over and over and over. And that's why al-Nusra has TOW missiles, has advanced air defense equipment. It's why we can claim that we're arming the Free Syrian Army, but we can't disengage them from ISIS. What does disengage mean? 6 months ago, we were saying that we were arming the Free Syrian Army to fight ISIS. Now they can't disengage from ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
What does disengage mean? When you have a group of 10 people and they are engaged, are they having sex with one another, which is certainly a possibility? Are they fighting alongside one another? Yes.
And so if we don't disengage, are Russian bombers going to blow up some Americans pretty soon and create a big international incident?
We know that the American attack on Deir ez-Zor killed 20 Russian advisors, we've been told. I can't say it's absolutely true. And I believe if it is true, the Russian people have not been told. If they had,
they're demanding retribution.
Putin could not have controlled the backlash.
Right. And so who is in control of the American policy that allows these things to happen?
And to that extent,
that's a million-dollar question.
My answer would be no one at all.
Okay. Somebody must have given the orders to do that so-called mistake bombing run.
And you're basing that on what?
Well, okay, then there's probably a pilot of the plane who took it upon himself to
it's a bunch of pilots of a bunch of planes from three different countries.
The assumption is that there is a fully functioning and intact top-to-bottom command structure. Unfortunately, that's broken down.
That's
have breaks in the command
structure. On your part, Kevin. And it's a supposition based on a belief that the Pentagon wasn't taken over by crazed neocons and dominionists years ago and that they're still running around, or that the CIA is in the pay of the Saudis, and that we keep running into, in the past they were called non-state actors. And you're familiar with the term, Kevin?
Oh, yeah. Well, Gordon, that's your brilliant essay that you contributed to my new book, Orlando False Flag, The Clash of Histories. That was a last-minute contribution. And word for word, you know, if you add up the value of the essay, per word, I think that you might have come close to winning the prize in that book, because you really summed up an important point about the so-called non-state actors that are basically running things now. The states have broken down, And these privatized, you know, Cheney comes in and privatizes the military, and this is happening all over the place. And so you're right. We now have so many compartmentalized, sort of quasi-privatized systems with no command and control. But
let's go right into the Fetzer world here, okay? What if governments and leaders like Boris Johnson and who's that woman in that runs your country now? May something? What's her name now?
Theresa May.
Theresa May, that's her name. I thought her first name was like, wait, I thought, isn't it May Britt?
She's Jewish, apparently.
Okay, anyway. But that May person that runs your country, do you ever get the feeling that our political leaders are only middle management or minor dons in an organized crime outfit?
It sure looks that way, doesn't it?
It does, Britain, yeah.
But that's the whole thing. It exactly looks that way. And we've kind of all believed that for an awfully long time, haven't we? So why don't we, if that has been a working hypothesis, and that certainly nobody's in command, that events make no sense, that the only winner in anything always is Israel, based on this general belief that Israel is full of magical wizards who are plotting the destruction of the earth, and I'm not always convinced of all that, you know, because you have to drag everything out and run it out of the wash and dryer a little bit and test it out. As long as we put these ideas together that explain things and then work very hard to punch the to pound the square pegs into the round hole, we're not going to be able to watch events. And so to some extent, you know, when I watch who comes out as trolls for Trump, I can see people who have come out when I cross Israel's red lines. These same people come out for Trump now, who haven't shown up on a computer for 2 years, and they think somehow they have standing because they used to be able to call people's, you know, kids on the phone and talk dirty and upset people back when people used to worry about stuff like that, you know. Now people look forward to those calls, you know. People who believe that their filth and depravity can intimidate because they're just so nasty. And
That's right. You forwarded me a couple of emails recently from some very foul-mouthed hooligans for Trump. So we've got trolls for Trump and hooligans for Trump. But Gordon, in terms of VT's take on Trump, and Ian, you can join in on this one because you're certainly one of our go-to sort of Trump bashers. I've got a lot of people who are coming, you know, getting to me saying, this is over the top. Like, and they're reacting sort of by saying, you know, there's something wrong with VT. It's like so extreme in its Trump bashing that it's getting, you know, it's creating a backlash.
Well, hey, Kevin, isn't this kind of a point here? The man's a total absolute asshole. He's a danger to the world. He's utterly incompetent. He has to be gotten rid of.
You know, Gordon, you and Tarpley like totally echo each other on this. Do you worry about that?
I don't care about Tarpley. It's kind of the point. The issue being is in, and when people say, no, just because he's utterly stupid and incompetent, and I, of course,
Trump or Tarpley?
Hillary, I hate Hillary for what reasons? And when you ask their reasons, they, didn't Ben Carson say that she's working for Lucifer? And then didn't she strangle, Vince Foster? And then didn't she send all those emails? And then when they get all that shit together, it doesn't all come to a single Trump groping. All of it comes.
Well, wait a minute, Gordon. So you're telling me like, okay, so these the Clinton rape scandal is all completely made up. It's a vast right wing conspiracy.
Rape scandal, yeah. The one where a person who says they were kidnapped at age 7. By an MK Ultra group and then secretly raped by Hillary Clinton?
Kathy
O'Brien?
Did Trump invite that one to the debate?
Did you check into that, Kevin?
That's one I somehow missed, but I've read about some of the others.
I'll relate a little passage from Kathy O'Brien's book that sums up the quality of the book. She writes in the book that the Clintons invited, oh God, who was the vice president who then went out to talk about climate change? Gore. They invited Gore and his wife, Tipper, over at Christmas to the White House. And Tipper Gore's very Christian, very devout. And the story is that she punched Hillary Clinton after seeing how Hillary Clinton had decorated the Christmas tree. The story is Hillary had covered the Christmas tree in dildos, condoms, sex toys, and other such highly offensive things. Now, if you believe that story, you know, I'll sell you some magic beans.
Mm. Well, I've always had my...
From Kathy O'Brien's book.
I've always had my reservations about Kathy O'Brien, I will admit that.
Here's the woodshed for you, okay? Kathy O'Brien's rape experience was brought out in a deprogramming hypnosis where she was raped by the Clintons after being kidnapped as part of an MK Ultra program. Now, I can only think about 10,000 other people who claim the same stuff. Now, I could also say that she is currently diagnosed with multiple personality disorder, but frankly, you know, in today's world, that's pretty mainstream compared to this. But she's an utterly discredited person, and the story was invented by Tom Hennigan and Stu Webb. Invented. And yet you have people out there who are passing this on as a legitimate story, and you mentioned it in this broadcast, not knowing it was a purposeful hoax and is actually...
Wait. Now, that's a straw man, or in this case, a straw woman argument, because I'm not mentioning Kathy O'Brien. I'm mentioning maybe the 15 others, including a couple who've actually...
Kevin's playing devil's advocate here, I think.
Kevin, that is the rape story you mentioned.
Really? I thought it was the 12-year-old one, and that's not Kathy O'Brien. Right?
No. I think what Gordon's getting at is the fact that we're even discussing it is giving them a bit of a win.
That is Kathy O'Brien.
Really? Okay. Well, in that case, I retract the 12-year-old one. But, you know, raping fully grown women, even though it's not as bad as what Republicans routinely do, is still a crime.
What woman was raped now? Name one.
Okay. Well, do you want me to pull up a few of these names?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, let's see.
But just while you're pulling one up, I'll give you an example of the sort of the way that the actions against the Clintons work. That Monica Lewinsky came along in 97, and up until Monica Lewinsky, how many countries had Bill Clinton bombed? None. After Monica Lewinsky, it's half a dozen. Bosnia, Sudan, various places. That's why the Mossad sent Monica Lewinsky to compromise Bill Clinton so that they could then influence American foreign policy in the way that they had not been able to for the first 7 years of Clinton. So that last year of Clinton, he behaves in a belligerent way, much like Bush Jr. then did, because he's being influenced due to the dirt they've got on him via Lewinsky.
Okay, that's a good point. Gordon, let me just mention that here's a fact that does tend to, you know, to militate in your favor here. That if you start, you know, the quick Google turns up, what's the source here of the most prominent Bill Clinton rape news that we can get right now? It's Fox News, and it's indeed my old friend, Sean Hannity, who launched me to international fame and not quite fortune.
And is someone who is an irresponsible fabricator?
Sean Hannity?
Wasn't that an all yes?
Okay, but he's now covering this stuff.
Hey, I can out devil's advocate you.
But of course this information and these women have been telling the story long before Hannity invited them up. Okay, here are the names: Juanita Broderick, Paula Jones, and Kathleen Willey, who were just on the Fox show after Donald Trump brought them to the latest debate last Sunday. Broderick is a former nursing home administrator who claims she was raped by Bill Clinton during his campaign for Arkansas governor in 1978.
I think the amount of time that's passed, if they could have stuck that on Bill by now, they would have.
Kevin, let's talk about some of this. Tell me about what you know about Steve Kanga. And we've all got computers in front of us, including if there's anybody in the audience type in the name Steve Kanga. K-N-G-A-S, actually. Type in Steve Kangas.
Oh, and the first suggestion that that Google gives you is Steve Kangas, CIA.
Yeah.
Would that be the guy? I've got a political activist, journalist, and chess teacher.
Steve Kangas was the first real Kevin Barrett. Steve Kangas was the guy when we go back to the early days of the internet. Steve Kangas was the guy.
Oh yeah, I remember him now. Yeah.
Activist found shot to death outside billionaire's office. Questions remain in apparent suicide. April 12, 1999. In a strange twist in the Clinton scandal, Steve Kangas, 37, former Army intelligence specialist in Berlin and Central America, Soviet eavesdropper, stroke analyst, and proprietor of a comprehensive liberal internet site, Liberalism Resurgent, and remember this is 99, so there wasn't a lot on the internet then, that was at http://www.scruzz.net/kangaroo, was found shot to death, victim of an apparent suicide, on the 39th floor outside Pittsburgh offices of philanthropist Richard Mellon Scaife.
Philanthropist, I love the idea of philanthropist. Kevin?
There is a vast right-wing conspiracy, I'll grant you that. Now,
the billionaire who has given millions to right-wing groups trying to destroy President Clinton, including the Heritage Foundation, Landmark Foundation, Free Congress Foundation, and the Western Journalism Center.
And, of course, Steve Kangas was there investigating the relationship between Richard Mellon Scaife, and he had a couple of retired New York City police detectives in his pay that had, among others, recruited Paula Jones and these others that you're talking about and put them on the payroll of his foundation, okay? And that's when Steve Kangas showed up dead. Now, if we also remember, let's see, who else did he fund? Now, didn't we have a special prosecutor there? What was his name now?
I was looking at the article here.
A Clinton special prosecutor?
Yeah, who was the special prosecutor here? And Ken Starr.
Yeah.
Ken Starr was on Scaife's payroll for some time. Now, Starr had been promised a seat on the Supreme Court for bringing down the Clintons. And when he failed to do this, Scaife, and God, what's the place? And this is the same school out in California, Pepperdine, where Mike Harris got his MBA. When Ken Starr failed, he was made president of Pepperdine University, which Scaife controls because he's the largest single contributor out there. But this was all orchestrated through Ken Starr, a couple of dirty work New York City detectives, and these women you're mentioning. And among the things, of course, they did in going after the Clintons is they murdered, these people murdered Steve Kangas. And that we can make a pretty much slam dunk case for that. If you haven't looked, and also I suggest, Kevin, you read the work of Steve Kangas and find how much you're likely to admire what he's had to say, see the quality of what he's done, because he's a trained intelligence officer who went over to the light side instead of the dark side.
Okay, well, and we'll pick it up from there in the second hour, and I will refresh my memory about Steve Kangas. I have actually heard about him before. We'll try and separate the fact from the fiction here and get a more sophisticated inside view of what's going on with these scandals. Are they all manufactured?
You've got someone who's been a serial child molester and rapist who has bought a series of Eastern European sleepwalkers in the U.S. and why?
Okay, we'll identify that individual after the break. Welcome back to the second hour of our live edition of Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, trying to peel back the surfaces, the headlines, the mainstream media propaganda, and look at the reality crawling around underneath. And right now we're kind of in the middle of taking apart the scandals and the talk, the crazy circus that's been breaking out around our presidential elections with a couple of candidates that not a whole lot of us are particularly very excited about. In the last debate, we had Trump inviting a bunch of alleged Bill Clinton rape victims to sit in the front row and trying to throw Hillary off. It was quite the circus as presidential debates go. And we're here with Gordon Duff and Ian Greenhull of Veterans Today, who are arguing that the Trump forces are basically inventing that. So Gordon, your position here is that there's no truth to these Bill Clinton sexual assault stories.
They were proven long ago to have been all hired by Richard Mellon Scafey. They were all paid tons and tons of money. It's all wonderfully documented. And you were around when all of that was done. We exposed that years ago. And it was investigated when there was the full power of both houses of Congress and a special prosecutor. These people were interviewed over and over and couldn't stand the light of day then.
So are they like method acting or something? How can they still, you know, be going all this time acting in character when it's all just lies? Or have they been hypnotically programmed?
That was one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. There is no continuity. There's no method acting. There is, the statement you made is predicated on something you just pulled out of, I'm not sure entirely where, meaning you're saying that they have been living as the...
Does this to me every day, by the way.
No, they were just rehired and pulled out of the sewer and had money thrown at them by the Breitbart group and dragged in here. Nice new paychecks. And frankly, you know, the idea that you've... Is there some value that they aren't still dead or that they're still real, willing to be paid money? And they are being paid money. They were paid money before. So you're saying people who were paid money before are still willing to be paid money, and you find that surprising somehow, and you believe that's a valid point for us to be discussing and having the two of us on instead of, let's say, talking about Tony Hall?
Well, let's
because you feel a need to spend our time mollifying a few whining assholes that as soon as the election is over and Trump is crushed and with a little hope he's going to be indicted for the endless number of crimes. You know, one of the ads we're running on TV here, you know, I'm in Ohio, which is a big battleground state. And, you know, frankly, Hillary is pulling in a huge amount of Wall Street money. So we're having the TV and radio are continuous with ads. One of my favorites that started running today is about an Ohio-based clothing manufacturer. They make men's suits. They have 100 employees. And the owner of the company came on and said, you know, one of my competitors is Trump's clothing line. And his suits are made in China. His ties are made in Indonesia. His cufflinks are made in Hong Kong. And this is the man who says he's going to make America great by stopping jobs from going overseas. Now, we could also mention the Trump Towers, built with mob concrete. It's the last major concrete building built in New York. We can talk about Roy Cohn, but you won't know.
Well, surely. I've talked about that until the cows come home. And let's mention the is it a rumor or a fact that Trump's gambling business, that is, when he first went into business, that was essentially in partnership with Meyer Lansky money?
Yes. Atlantic City.
Did you read our expose on Roy Cohn this week?
Not this week, no, but I've read a few exposés on Roy Cohn and Trump's connection with him.
The link that you're talking about between Meyer Lansky and Trump and gambling all centers around the notorious company Resorts International. And if anybody wants to look at, you know, the links between Trump and the mob and gambling, just look at Resorts International and the people who were partners with Trump in Resorts International, and you'll find it all out. And this is why I'm so staggered that Trump, I mean, nobody ever told me to go after Donald Trump. I went after Donald Trump from the first time I heard that he was standing, because I was already familiar with the fact that he's a scumbag. I wasn't aware of all these sexual peccadilloes, but I knew about all these mob ties. And I don't understand how he ever got this far, because you don't have to delve into the realms of anything, you know, unprovable or out of the mainstream to find all this horrible dirt on the man. You can establish that he is a creature of the mob, who every business associate he's ever done business with was a mob creature, just by looking at mainstream sources published in the last 25, 30 years. You don't have to go beyond looking at places like the Financial Times, the Washington Post, the New York Times. It's all there.
And isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting that the mainstream media sort of apparent onslaught on Trump isn't bringing this stuff up? That's what puzzles me. I mean, it appears that the mainstream media is bashing Trump at every opportunity, and yet we're really not seeing it expose this really obvious mob connection.
How can anyone?
Ian, Dad's here. I had my trip to the woodshed by Ian last week. I thought I knew about Roy Cohn. You know, I knew about Joe McCarthy. I knew Joe McCarthy was gay. I knew Roy Cohn was gay. I knew he was a mob attorney after the late 50s, 1960s. I know he was a major mover in the mob. What I didn't know is that he was a co-founder of the Central Intelligence Agency. I didn't know that. Ian spent several days doing research. We put out a landmark article on Roy Cohn I'm eating trail mix here, by the way. I've been on this bizarre diet where I'm eating either raw food or one kind of undigestible crap or another. But, hey, I weigh 175 pounds now.
So you're still in fighting shape.
Oh, yeah. Very much that. I can, guarantee I can do the full Daniel Craig out of the water thing, with the exception that every joint in my body is injured and torn right now. But I look really good, though.
Well, yeah, I can relate, Gordon, because, I've just lost, I think three straight one-on-one games to my 20-year-old son, and that's pretty rare. And if I had perfect joints, I think I could still, beat him consistently. So that
well,
the joints go.
Well, I'm in football.
No, basketball.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, but anyway, getting back to Roy Cohn and Trump.
Ian, pull up the Roy Cohn article.
I mean, the jaw-dropping moment for me was learning that Roy Cohn was one of the people who established Permindex. And anybody who's ever read about anything about JFK must have heard of Permindex. And then the next jaw-dropping thing was to discover that Permindex wasn't a CIA front. Permindex was Mossad. And at that time, Permindex was Mossad International.
Really? So that's another JFK Mossad connection.
Oh
yes.
Where we got in this, and this is where Fetzer really misses out by not being here. We went right inside the JFK assassination, and Roy Cohn walks into all of it. That's why our article, as a joke, did you see the graphic on this? You missed that.
No.
Oh Christ.
We'll link this stuff. And if you feel free to put the link in the Skype chat window so I can pop that onto the radio blog and people can actually look at these links.
Explain the graphic in.
Everybody's familiar with the picture of Lee Harvey Oswald stood in his backyard with a copy of the communist newspaper and a rifle.
Mm-hmm. And the shadows
are
on.
Real. Yeah. Oh, the head's pasted on. Yeah, the head's too big, etc. Well, I took Trump's high school picture where he's dressed up as a military cadet and put his head on that picture, and I deliberately made it too big and obvious that it was stuck on as an insider joke. Yeah. And I said to Gordon at the time, do you not see the irony here of me sticking a head onto a picture where the head was stuck on? So, you know, it's a joke that people who are familiar with JFK would have probably got, but upset a few commenters.
Right, and right. Well, maybe some of them are humorless. We do have a few humorless people reading VT. I'm not sure why.
The funniest comment was that VT is obviously funded by George Soros, because all these nasty anti-Trump memes talking about pictures like that one, you know, take a lot of time and effort to put together, and they're not doing it themselves. Like, no, come on, that took me 2 minutes in Photoshop. Yeah, it just. But that person who made that comment honestly believed that, you know, there was too much work involved in creating all the pictures that I've made recently. That must be an indicator that we're getting financing from George Soros.
So, sir, let's basically, Roy Cohn is tied in with this, you know, nasty drug dealing, Kennedy killing wing of the CIA.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And MI6 and the Mossad. He's a founding member of all three.
Uh-huh. Look at Louis. Look at the names to look at, as well as Roy Cohn, are Louis M. Bloomfield, the Dulleses, and James Jesus Angleton. Right. If you look at those people, you quickly come to the understanding that the establishment of the CIA and the Mossad was the work of those people, and it was largely they were both created by MI6.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is pretty much where a lot of VT investigations have gone, you know, towards this this particular sort of inter-intel agency sort of, you know, but off the books, or even, you know, an overworld really above the formal intelligence agencies as government operations. This is a privatized crime cartel with its tentacles into different intelligence agencies.
Yes.
My Trump's entire business life has been as an operative of those groups.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that Permindex, not only, and it runs, well, let's take Roy Cohn back. Roy Cohn came on our radar. Roy Cohn's responsible. And this is, you know, this
Roy
is...
Roy Cohn created Donald Trump. 100% created that man.
And created all of his business empire is created by Roy Cohn.
Correct. Every single thing that Trump built in Manhattan was negotiated for him by Roy Cohn. By negotiating, I mean, Roy Cohn would call, you know, city commissioners and, you know, various people to his office where, you know, like the mobster he was, tell them, look, this is what we're going to do, and you're going to do it, or you're going to end up at the bottom of the East River.
And Kevin, as you know, Permindex, his company, Permindex, is the company that gave Israel its nuclear weapon.
Right. So
it's also part of the French connection.
And then Permindex is the Permindex group were the founders of General Dynamics.
Wow. That's in General Dynamics is still the biggest military contractor, right?
And it is run entirely.
Most of the Israeli Air Force flies F-16s built by General Dynamics. But the other thing that I learned from this research was a newfound respect for the work of Michael Collins Piper, because he wrote a book about this where, I forget the name now, Final Judgment, where he put all this together. He put Permindex at the center of the JFK assassination. And the further research that we've done proves that he was right. And the other thing that he wrote that I would encourage everybody to check out before the 8th of November was a lengthy article called Who Towers Behind Trump. If you read that article, it will leave you in absolutely no doubt that Donald Trump was 100% a creation of American organized crime. What gets called the Mafia, but is not Italian-American. They just like to call it the Mafia because that's an Italian-sounding name that makes people think of Scarface and The Godfather and The Sopranos, and they don't realize that it's actually far bigger than that. It's, you know, it's the big corporations, the big bankers, you know, it's far bigger than five families in New York.
Okay.
And Donald Trump is 100% a creation of that, because Roy Cohn was the nexus of American organized crime, and Roy Cohn created Donald Trump like a rabbi created a golem out of clay.
Interesting. And here we have this bizarre situation where Trump, who is, he probably hasn't read a book cover to cover in his life, or at least since he left school, He's clearly got mega ADD, and he yet blurts out these little nuggets of sort of forbidden truth about a number of subjects.
Because he reads them on the internet, including, God help you, Kevin, you understand he reads VT.
Right. Well, you know what I was thinking, Gordon, was that if we need like a little break at False Flag Weekly News, where Professor Tony Hall is, right now he's having a real serious battle for his career after being suspended without pay, but he's still coming on False Flag Weekly News, holding down the fort. He's replaced Jim Fetzer. Jim was a lot of fun to work with at times. But we did have some issues, and one of them was his sourcing. But Jim is quick on his feet with the banter and the repartee and the sort of the talk show host type thing, which is probably why Jim likes Trump so much. He sees a kind of a kindred soul. Only Jim is frankly a whole lot smarter than Trump ever will be. However, maybe when Trump gets beat, after the election, he'll need a fallback career, and we could bring him on False Flag Weekly News as an occasional replacement for Fetzer, because Trump would be pretty much sort of like what Fetzer was. Yeah, except maybe a little slicker and not nearly as smart.
Yeah, but a break into an area where, and it doesn't get into your world often enough, there's this little issue of character,
Yeah.
And when you're on the radio show, this isn't a Kevin with character. You're an actor, and you're playing to an audience, and you have to do this. You're an entertainer because you need to be for varying reasons. And one of them, because what happened to Tony Hall happened to you. On the other hand, God only knows, Ian is, lives in Britain. That's bad enough. I'm sitting here a one percenter. Do I want another Mercedes today or not? I'm not.
Right, and this does make some of us a little suspicious about, maybe that's partly why you tolerate Hillary Clinton.
No, I don't tolerate Hillary Clinton at all. I have Donald Trump. Is a two-bit criminal.
He's a clear and present danger.
Yeah, and then...
That's the key thing. He is the clear and present danger, so we're firing at him.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton represents a disgusting status quo, and Donald Trump is a monstrosity. And then the problem with Trump, and this is with Trump himself, you understand, if I were hanging out with someone... By the end of the evening, I would have probably slapped Donald Trump. I mean, he would,
I would pay to see that. In fact, yeah. I would pay to film that and put it on YouTube because I'd make a big profit off it.
Let's get a Kickstarter campaign going.
Gordon Duff slaps Donald Trump. I can't wait to see that one.
I think we could get a Kickstarter going that would raise enough money for that in 3 days.
Indeed.
First of all, if you're... let's say we're at a club somewhere in New York. I'm there with Donald and his boys or whatever. And Donald walks up to a bar and grabs some girl in her, in her crotch area. First of all,
no. Oh, man.
I'm just telling you, if you're a girl and it's Friday night and you're at a bar in New York, Donald Trump's not the first person that's grabbed you in the crotch.
But if Gordon Duff is there, he's going to be the last.
Yeah,
I'd like to invite Donald Trump to come to North of England, to any of the cities of North of England, and find an attractive lady in a bar and grab her by the crotch. And then I want to see, how many people it takes to pull her off him. Because if you did that to a woman in England, she'd beat the hell out of you. I mean, you do not... I don't know what it's like in America. I've never been to America, but that behavior would get you punched here.
Yeah, he would have he'd have some serious problems in Morocco and Iran as well.
But let's not overemphasize these, because this is, again, this is the dressing on it here. And the guy's got an impulse control problem. We don't have him insulting and punching. He's actually kissing and grabbing and putting hands inside clothes, and he's doing this all the time. And as these kinds of assaults go, by the way, this is the very mild version of it. So I'm not persecuting him on this. This is a... It's a serious problem, character disorder. Obviously, he's got more than a few screws loose. Mm. But there are worse people than this.
Yeah, like the Franklin scandal people.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
When he said an IQ of 140, I think he was doubling it.
Yeah, and in this call, in this call, a 140 is room temperature here. There's nobody here under 150. And...
Well, let's get off of this. You know, that frankly, this election is not only, you know, just
Kevin. Let me. I have to vent.
Depressing is even the word for it.
I have to vent a little bit here. I've been going through elections. I'm involved in party politics. I've been involved in Republican Party politics. I've worked on elections. I ran one state election. I've worked on presidential elections on both parties. My parents are O-line Democrats. I worked passing out stuff as a kid for Adlai Stevenson. I go back that far.
Well, that dates you.
And 1956, yeah. And this is, and if you're sickened by this, I'm not sickened by, you know, the mediocrity Dwight Eisenhower or the monstrous Richard Nixon. That's my phone going. That's Jim Hankey. Hey, Jim Hankey. Jim Hankey, are you there? I think I guess got butt dialed here. That's Colonel James Hankey.
Well, that would be cool to have Jim Hankey on the show.
Well, I think he's in a pizza restaurant in Las Vegas right now, and I just got butt dialed while he was reaching.
Jim's another guy we could. What do we call him? Like a sort of former U.S. military intelligence insider? Could we call him something like that? Or even the word "former" might be.
He's a former intelligence chief of NATO.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I guess.
So he's a well placed VT source. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, very well placed. Yeah.
Well, he's not a source. He's an editor.
Well, yeah, there you go.
I mean, that's a.
Well, I mean, just before, you know, pick on what Gordon was saying about he's got, you know, vast experience in U.S. politics. I'm an Englishman, a complete outsider with no experience almost of American politics. And this election is just, the only thing I can say about it is, oh my God. I always knew that Americans could sometimes be a little dumb, but I have not, the level of just delusion and detachment from reality that a lot of people are displaying in this election, it's got me so flabbergasted. You know, it's got
so let me give me one last devil's argument statement on the election before we get to the Tony Hall thing. Isn't it sad that Hillary and the machine was able to steal the primaries from Bernie Sanders? If we had Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump, if we had Bernie versus Donald right now, we would have good versus evil, like have one of the best candidates ever against one of the worst.
Yes.
Okay. Let me make another point, Kevin. This is election three, okay? We have a mob candidate, and this mob candidate, an absolute mob candidate, is Donald Trump. And prior to the mob candidate, Donald Trump, we had Mitt Romney. I didn't know Mitt Romney was a mob candidate until the FBI sent me his files. And, you know, I'm sitting on a debriefing of a retired FBI agent. I've got it sitting in my, I put two of the debriefing things up in my, in terrible audio, in my YouTube channel, where they're discussing the mob ties of the Romney family.
And you were obviously right about that. Even, you know, the L.A. Times, reporting the earnings of his Bain Capital Company that were, hundreds of percent, 200 or 300% per year on a sustained basis for many, many years, proving that this was not a legitimate enterprise.
Laundering mob money, that's all they existed for. And then before that was John McCain. And John McCain has sat at the center of organized crime for years. He married into a mob family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, you know, you've got a pretty decent track record on all that.
And
stuff.
Even Trump calls out McCain. And the damn thing is, and as you pointed out before, it's one of the areas I stand behind him 100%. He is absolutely right in what he's saying about John McCain. Of course, he got it from us.
And I want to say one last good thing about Trump before we get off of this, which is that despite being absolutely as horrible as you guys are saying he is, I agree. It looks to me like he actually is, and maybe even then some if we get into the Islamophobia stuff. But at least with his ADD and his crazy blurt outs of crap he's read on the internet over at InfoWars or whatever, he's helping us basically blow up the morass of delusion that passes for American political consciousness. No, nobody trusts authority anymore for good reason, and he's helping that process along.
That's exactly right. He is doing because you'll never be able to tell the same lies because he has the things. This is what I find disgusting. I'll hear one of these Democratic ads, and they'll be going after Donald Trump, and the things they're going after him for are the things where he and I are in total agreement.
Exactly.
Thank God, if they had me, of course, then I can defend myself better than he can.
Yeah, and sometimes I worry though that they're putting these so-called conspiracy theories into Trump's mouth in order to help discredit the conspiracy theory meme. The New York Times had a huge article on this is the conspiracy theory election, and it had a big picture of Trump, you know, his eyes peering out from behind a blind or something. And it actually makes us, you know, us real conspiracy theorists, you know, we're the people that they invented that term to malign. It makes us look bad to have Trump being our main guy. I mean, he's worse than Alex Jones.
Early on, Jim Dean and I did everything we possibly could to save Donald Trump. Everything. We were contacted by his people. We agreed to do briefing material. I agreed to go in and sit down with him. And, I'm not personally hurt by this. He had a choice of which way he wanted to go, and it's how he was guided. When he wanted to head over to the Breitbart and the, in this case, if you take Jeff Rentz's, move on this, this is when we're in the Roy Cohn material. Roy Cohn, every step of the way worked hand in hand with the Bronfman family in Canada. And according to Jeff Rentz, the Bronfman family in Canada, are the ones who've poured all the cash into InfoWars and Breitbart, who are managing Trump's campaign. The Bronfmans, who, of course, are part of the crime family and have been all along with Roy Cohn.
Well, they're a big part of the crime family. And they're the biggest Canadian part of the crime family. And that's a perfect place to segue into the anti-Tony Hall witch hunt, which is essentially being run by the machine that's associated with the Bronfmans. They are big contributors to the B'nai B'rith Canada, which is spearheading this bizarre witch hunt. You know, they're charging Tony Hall with what? You can't even figure out what it is. The university president at Lethbridge claims that he has the right to dismiss tenured faculty at will for no particular reason. And to the extent he's given a reason, it's that Tony Hall's statements that the Holocaust, like every other subject under the sun, can be debated in the academy, and B, that there is an Israeli or Zionist connection to 9/11, that these two positions of Tony Hall violate the learning environment. They create a discrimination-tinged learning environment at the university, so he can just fire a tenured professor at will with no due process.
And Kevin, do this. Bring the audience up to speed, since you and I already did our own little radio show earlier today. It was my belief that if Tony Hall had built on what I believe a solid rock his tying Israel and 9/11, Israel to 9/11, that the solid rock that opens that question is a certain video. Go ahead and explain what we talked about earlier.
Okay, well, there's such a long list of evidence tying Israel to 9/11, ranging from circumstantial to very, very kind of hard forensic evidence, that there's actually a sort of a debate among various folks about, you know, which things should we foreground. You know, if you want to blow up the official story, okay, you just point to Building 7. But when it comes to Israel and 9/11, what do you point to? Do you point to dancing Israelis? No, Gordon, you say that rather than the dancing Israelis that everybody knows about, we should be pointing to the attempted bombings of the bridges and tunnels, and specifically the video with the police radio transcript about the arrest of the apparent Israelis with a truck bomb, right?
No.
Yeah, okay, go ahead and clarify it.
Here's what we have, and let's see if I can do this. I'll go into Google, and I will type into Google final 9/11 and see what comes up. Final 9/11 remains came up. It's on new Google, final 9/11. Okay.
And you're talking about the VT article that we were discussing earlier today?
final word? Yes. No, the video.
Oh, the video. Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've only posted that video about 100 times in my article.
Dan Rather talking about them.
Yeah, can somebody pull it up and play it?
Okay, let's see what we can do here.
But take it over to the broadcast, not the video is a two-part video, guys. It's my guys, I'm speaking to the wonderful men and women of the audience out there. One of you folks, pull that video up and key it up for me, since it's not coming up on, as it normally does, YouTube video 9/11 final. It's not coming up.
I guess the Google search algorithms have been altered.
Oh, yeah. Would that be the case? Could that be the case?
It happens every now and then.
It's in the VT article. Let's go into VT, and I guess I will do this. Excuse me, folks. I'm eating up valuable time here, which is, you know, and we'll never get back. These heartbeats, I could spend running my 9.5 minute miles, which, you know, are a little bit humorous, I guess, but that's what I'm doing right now.
That's not too bad. That's not too bad. So let's see if we can find it here. There's no Israel bit 9/11, all the proof in the world. That's not it. Really, truck bombs. That's not it.
Yeah, I've got it.
I'm going down through our Boris Johnson.
I'll give you the link now. I've got it.
Okay, I'm winding down. I see Donald Trump there with that Carcano rifle in his hand. Oh, what a horrible person you are. It must have taken you hours to put that.
That's actually a pretty good Photoshop job, Ian. Did you do that yourself?
Yeah, it only took a couple of minutes.
Really?
Black and white is very easy.
I'm going to have to hire you to Photoshop.
Okay, here we go.
I'm
playing right now.
I've been using Photoshop since 93, so, you know, it's just one of those things. Yeah.
I'm keying up the video here.
Yeah, I've just sent the video to you in the chat.
So we're hearing the police tape?
Guys, I'm trying to play it. I'm trying to play it now, so I'm keying it up. So this may work if we all stop talking for a minute.
Okay, here we go.
Let's try silence, and if in 20 seconds you don't hear anything and it's dead air, you can yell at me. And I play start right now, and I'm going to start queuing it across to the important part.
Three sources, dead forces found, there were two or three, the van.
Wait.
Our apologies to our viewers about 5 minutes ago, but we do have an established connection now with CNN's Deborah Ferry. The reports we're getting now, two or three men arrested on the New Jersey Parkway. Deborah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. That is the information that I'm getting from two sources, that there was a van either on the New Jersey Turnpike or the Garden State Parkway, and that it was near the George Washington Bridge. There were two or three men who were in the van. The van was pulled over. It is not clear why the van was pulled over, but when it was, law enforcers found tons of explosives inside of the van. That is right now all I'm hearing. But again, two to three people in custody, and we are trying to get more information on that right now.
Deborah, I don't mean to put you on the spot here. Do you know where on the Jersey Turnpike this was? How far from New York City?
We do not know that. We are looking into that. There is one report that it was the New Jersey Turnpike. There is another report that it was very close to the bridge, if not on the bridge. So again, these details are all emerging, and we're trying to piece them together. But that's what we've got so far. Two to three people in custody right now found with a van filled with explosives.
Well understood. Deborah, where are you tonight? I'm going
late tonight. The two suspects come on FBI custody after a truckload of explosives was discovered around the George Washington Bridge. That's been...
I'm stopping that one right there. The first one was CNN. Tons of explosives. George Washington Bridge. This is 9/11. And this one currently with too much bass. And
Gordon, I think we need a little more volume. Did you turn down your volume?
I've got to stop now. I'll turn it back on again. We're playing again.
Okay. No. New York, New Jersey, over the Hudson River. Whether the discovery of those explosives has anything to do with other deaths today is unclear. The FBI has two suspects in hand.
Whether the incident of fighting the two individuals that the FBI has, and there are tons of explosives. Well, they caught people on the George Washington Bridge with weapons and tons of explosives, according to CNN. And here's my point with Hall. And for those of you who don't have this, give the title of the article so it can be searched. Give it exactly.
Breaking 9/11, filling in the map, tracing the news.
And you'll find that as a lead video, and that lead video establishes these things. And this is a listen carefully thing, and God help you if you're working for me. Because
okay, could you repeat the title? That title again, Ian, slowly and clearly. There was an echo there.
No problem. Breaking: 9/11, filling in the map, tracing the nukes. And I will send you the link to it so you can pass that out to the people.
Okay, we will post that with this radio show. So when we're talking about establishing the reasonable nature of Tony Hall's position that there is an Israeli or Zionist connection to 9/11, pointing at this particular video, this CNN report, you think would be kind of the place to start?
Here's what we know. Let me do this one. We know these things. We know that a van, now I know that there were three vans. I know that there were arrests made elsewhere. I know that jammers were recovered. And I know there's a grand jury in Houston, Texas, holding physical evidence on 9/11. We also know there was an FBI investigation that involved certain Israelis and Mohammed Atta, and one of the VT editors was part of that FBI investigation. And we have direct knowledge of nuclear weapons being brought into the United States and used against the World Trade Center. And our information is information not from what we've gotten dot connecting. We have information from one of the people who took part in the FBI investigation that the FBI knows that the weapons were brought in. We have not only show where they were brought in, but we can also show the route that they were transported into Manhattan. We have that too, and it's in this article, and it's information from the FBI through an informant, and it is not something we figured out or read off the internet. It's something that I blackmailed somebody out of. And
the Mossad art students were based in Fort Lee, in New Jersey, and the FBI had a surveillance operation watching both them and Mohammed Atta, who was also living in Fort Lee, New Jersey, just around the corner from the Mossad art students.
The person in the FBI investigation that was our informant gave me the address of their home, and we have a photograph of the front of their house. Gave me the address of the home of Mohammed Atta, and we have the photograph of that. And the FBI ran surveillance on the street. By the way, it's Tom Hunter Road in Fort Lee, New Jersey, and we have a photograph of that home as well. So we have all this. This isn't conjecture. We have all of this information, and if somebody wants to play with it, we have a person who was part of the investigation, who worked on the surveillance teams watching them, and who could be subpoenaed to testify on this, although they're under federal gag order. That's what subpoenas are for, and they can fight that out with the grand jury. And we will be glad to supply Tony Hall with the name and contact information so that he can subpoena those individuals.
Now, would a subpoena in a Canadian courtroom get them off of that gag order?
Yes, it would. Well, no. The point being that if the gag order stood, then the Canadian case would probably fall apart. And, of course, if the U.S. resisted that subpoena, if a U.S. court resisted the subpoena, it would be so embarrassing to Israel that the case would fall apart. It would be death to Israel, literally.
Yeah.
This could be terrified
of America finding out they did 9/11.
Let me carry this forward as a former cop would, how this works. The video we have proves that there was an arrest on 9/11 of people in a white van. It's described And we have what we didn't play, but it's on the same tape, is the audio from the arrest itself. We have
what
that
did they too. Say when they got arrested as well? We are not your enemies. The Palestinians are your enemies. That's a bit of a strange thing to say to an arresting New York police officer, isn't it?
But weapons and explosives, George Washington Bridge, okay? Now, according to records, and listen carefully, folks, we can prove this. Two people were arrested. Tons of explosives. We have the audio of the arrest, the recording. We have CNN, and we have CBS's news stories, both of which are suppressed. I'm looking here at a frozen screen with Dan Rather with his eyes half closed saying, arrested on the George Washington Bridge. We also know this, that according to the FBI, there was only what they're saying now. It's their story, and they're going to live or die by it, and die is closer to the truth. They claim there was only one arrest on that date, and that those people were Israeli citizens. That one white van was stopped, and the people were arrested, held for 10 weeks, and returned to Israel. And you're familiar with that, are you not?
Oh, that's in all the mainstream sources. That's Fox News reported that. The Jewish Daily Forward reported that. Haaretz reported that. Christopher Ketchum reported that in Salon, and so on and so on.
I've got you taped to the chair, Kevin. You can get your interrogation now. Have you ever heard an audio reporting of that arrest?
Of the actual arrest? We have the police dispatcher tape, which I've heard, yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, when the art students you're talking about were arrested, was there a story on CNN and CBS that you can refer to?
I don't believe so.
No. So you've only got one story, and they don't say there were video cameras. They say there were tons of explosives. So you have one van and one arrest. We have a problem with five people or two people, which I guess you can deal with however you want. But the only van we know of being stopped, the only one that was reported on CBS and CNN, had tons of explosives in it. And yet we only have one group of suspects who were held and then released. Now, there's no proof. Would you say it's reasonable for me to say there is no proof that we've been subjected to that they had video cameras and they didn't really have weapons and tons of explosives?
Well, Gordon, here I would have to question you a little bit because, okay, we do have this material that you've cited indicating that there was this arrest of the truck bomb and the people with the white van with the weapons and explosives, but we not only have these reports after the fact of the dancing Israelis being arrested, but I'm sure you've seen the many, many videos of interviews. They've interviews with the woman who reported them to the police, interviews with the cop, one of the cops who arrested them.
Kevin, heavens, too much caffeine today, but let's see, where do we want to pull you down in this one? So apparently, here is how this plays out. Terrorists with a huge truck bomb and a bunch of weapons are arrested. They're taken in. It's reported on the news, but those reports are sequestered, figuring people will forget. And so now these people are claiming that, well, why don't we just do this, since we've got all this chutzpah, spelled with a C-H, by the way. Let's just claim they were video cameras instead. And let's play it out as a narrative as though they were video cameras, and we can talk about video cameras now and people seeing people dancing and whatever, instead of speeding away from police with a car with a truck with tons of explosives. So as far as things go, the only evidence we have is that we have a report of an arrest where the police looked into a truck and found weapons and explosives. That's on our police tape. We have news reports of tons of explosives. What we don't have is any proof that cameras ever existed.
So if we go into court with this story, with these news reports, and then they say, well, show us the police department records and the official government records of this, and if we don't have any, won't they just say that, well, the news reports were mistaken?
Well, in the news reports and the police, all you were mistaken. They, yeah. First of all, in a court, that's a jury. And who's they?
A judge and or jury, I suppose.
So you're saying that a jury is going to believe, I can tell you, if I were an attorney, I could convince a jury that Dan Rather, who I would bring into court, you'd have to prove what you'd have to prove. Well, show me the cameras and then show me the people that were arrested. And we have the name of the arresting officer. And then I'm going to ask you, show me where the people from the van actually are now. How on 9/11 do you get caught racing across a bridge from Manhattan on 9/11 with tons of explosives, get arrested and disappear? That's not possible, is it?
Absolutely not. But, okay, Gordon, why do you prefer the story that they changed the weapons to cameras to the alternative, which would be that there were people with cameras, a different team, as well as people with weapons?
Simply because one of them can be proven in a court of law, and yours is wild dot connecting conjecture. Even though it may be true, I can prove the other one.
Wait a minute. These Israeli operatives went on television in Israel and backed up the story that they had prior knowledge of the attacks. So just that video alone is enough.
That sounds like locker room talk to me.
But that doesn't prove whether they were documenting it with cameras or watching it with weapons, does it?
It's what they said.
Yeah. That's
they said we were only there to document the event.
No. That's locker room talk. That's not evidence. That's what they said on a TV show. They could have been lying or making it up or coerced. Or it could be just locker room talk, right? It's
cameras and documentary sounds better than we had a load of weapons.
Locker room talk.
Well, either way, you take this material and you've got an obvious Israeli connection to 9/11, especially when you throw in the other 5,000 items. So we got to get this into a court case.
Show me the two guys, okay? Show me the two guys. And the only guys anyone had, you have people arrested, two guys with bombs arrested, and the only people you have are dancing Israelis who said they had cameras. Yet we know they were arrested before they had cameras. When they were arrested, they had tons of explosives. So I'm going to ask, where's the truck? Where's the tons of explosives? And why are you talking about cameras? It's either these guys are the ones with the tons of explosives, or you did something with the ones who were caught with the tons of explosives. What did you do with them?
Very good question. Well, what
this
did you?
This is going to be the biggest Canadian legal case since the Zundel one in the 80s, and Zundel won that one.
Right.
But I have my suspicions that this will not end up in court because that would end up with the disclosure of the fact that Israel did 9/11.
Kevin, and your next question would be: is how can we prove that these people were Israelis or that these people were one and the same?
No. That's not my next question. Is who disposed of the truck and where are they and how do we subpoena them or interview them?
Yeah. I actually know Bernie Kerik disposed of the truck. We know that. But there's no way of making Bernie Kerik talk. Is he dead now?
I don't know. He was in jail for a while. Got out a few years ago.
He had a part-time job making pizzas somewhere, as I remember now. And after almost being named the first head of the Department of Homeland Security, he was at a halfway house making pizzas. But where is Bernie Kerik now? But the point being is, when faced with the prospect of saying we disappeared those people or we made up the story for Dan Rather. I think,
Listeners maybe should think about The Little Drummer Girl, the John le Carré novel based on some supposed true life stories from the Mossad, and the way those people reinvent reality is very similar to what you're suggesting could have happened with these so-called dancing Israelis.
Mm. Well, yeah, again, that comment that when arrested, that we are not your enemies, the Palestinians are your enemies, that says a lot.
Absolutely. That's what the whole operation was designed to convince us, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and not just the Palestinians, but the Muslims, because let's face it, the Zionists have a problem with the 1.8 billion Muslims on earth who aren't all that happy that this Holy Land, which has been administered by Muslims pretty much ever since Islam existed, except during a couple of Crusader interludes, is now, you know, in the midst of this horrific ethnic cleansing. So you really need a war not only on the Palestinians, but also on not just the Middle Eastern countries, the seven countries in 5 years that Richard Clark, Richard Clark talked about.
Wesley Clark, sorry.
Yeah. Richard Clark's the other one, the bad guy. But also the entire Islamic world. And so they, you know, you set them up as radical Muslim hijackers, and you've got this whole war on terror strategy of tension playing out for the benefit of the Zionists for the next century.
Yes.
So it wasn't for a new American century, it was for a new Israeli century.
The thing is, under Islam, usury is illegal. Therefore, you cannot apply the same methods of control and conquest onto the Islamic world that have been successful in controlling the Christian world. Therefore, because you can't control the Islamic world through usurious financial system, that is another reason to destroy it. And
well, that's right.
Real underlying crux of why Islam is so demonized, and why any strong Islamic nation, whether it's Iraq under Saddam or Syria under Assad, has to be destroyed.
Well, I'm not sure if Saddam and Assad are exactly true Muslims and enemies of usury, but I think you're right in the larger issue. And in fact, the Friday khutbah that I preached in our little log cabin mosque in the woods here in Wisconsin today, was on the topic of riba or usury. And it's true that if the Islamic norms ever prevail on that, we're going to have to completely retool the world's currency system. And I think it would probably be a good idea.
Well, usury was illegal in Christianity until somebody at the Vatican decided they were going to drop that one.
That's one of the reasons.
And I wonder who persuaded them to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably the bankers for the Vatican who happened to be Jewish.
Right. So back to the presidential election for the last 30 seconds. On both sides, you know, on Trump's side, we've got this insane, narcissistic, egomaniacal, ADD and madman fronting for the worst element of organized crime. And on the other side, we've got somebody totally, you know, in the pocket of Goldman Sachs. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Either way you slice it, it's we're screwed.
Oh, no. My point is that Trump supporters are worse than Trump.
Okay, and they are. I agree with that. Just look at Mike Pence. Look at everybody surrounding him. Ah! Anyway, this is it. Truth Jihad Radio signing off. Kevin Barrett with my very special guest, Gordon Duff, and Ian Greenhowell making his debut appearance on Truth Jihad Radio. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Good night.